Hello and welcome back to In the Corner. I'm Cash, here with episode 21. So as I'm sure everybody listening to this knows, we had a huge fight weekend. You know, the last crescendo with Dmitry Bivol putting on a masterclass and defeating Artur Beterbiev to become undisputed light heavyweight champion on top of the biggest, best card in boxing history, maybe. Fantastic fight week. Fantastic fight card. Usually when you have something like that, there's a little bit of a cool down. You know, we don't there's not a lot of news after. You're still just kind of talking about the event over the weekend. And when you get to the next fight weekend, it's not that great. That's not the case this weekend. We had a huge card in Japan on Monday morning with Junto Nakatani winning by third round body shot KO. Then, or actually, I don't even know if it was a body shot, but it was a brilliant stoppage nonetheless. Then today we had the first of what's expected to be two press conferences this week for Chris Eubank Jr. versus Conor Benn, where Eubank slapped Benn with an egg at the end of the press conference and all hell broke loose. So excited to talk about that. And then upcoming this weekend, we have Gervonta Davis returning against Lamont Roach. So two boxing pay-per-views back-to-back weekends. Huge, awesome time for the sport. You know, we got some good topics to talk about today. What I want to start off with talking about is I missed a pretty big topic last week, or last episode, I should say, with Turki Alışık apparently, what it seems, cheating in the Hamza Shiraz Carlos Adames fight. So as we all know, Hamza Shiraz is an ambassador to Riyadh season. Turki undoubtedly wanted him to win the championship fight. And a clip emerged of him going up to Hamza's corner in between rounds. I believe it was before the 12th round is what people were saying. And he was telling them, you're behind on the scorecard. You're 2 points behind. And everybody saw this and said, he's cheating. He's telling, you know, Hamza, he looked at the scorecards and he's telling Shiraz, oh, you know, you're this much behind. And if that was the case, I would absolutely agree and say that is like horrible. Like, he should not be allowed to do that. That is just straight up cheating. I don't care if you run the sport, you're not allowed to go look at the scorecards and tell the fighters what's going on. You know, maybe if it's open scoring like the WBC does, but even their rules aren't even like that. So that doesn't make any sense. And then I started to think about it. I was like, hold on, this doesn't make any sense. He wouldn't be allowed to look at the scorecards. At least I don't think. Then again, he runs this stuff. It's in his country. He may have full control over what he wants to do, but you're not allowed to look at the scorecards. I don't think that Turki went over and said, give me the scorecard, looked at it, went over to Hamza's corner and said, you're this much behind. I think that His Excellency was watching the fight. He was scoring it himself and said, hey, you're 2 rounds behind, which is probably pretty accurate for what was going on in that fight. You know, it was close, but Hamza was probably definitely down and told him, hey, you need to do something here. And was just urging him on as a fan, as a supporter, as a boss. So I don't think that he was actually cheating. I don't think there's any way he'd be allowed to have the scorecards prematurely before the fight ended. So no, I don't think that he was cheating. If he is, yeah, you can't be doing that. And he won't face any punishment because he's His Excellency. But there's no, then we need to tighten up the security on these scorecards. You know, but no, I do not think that that was the case. I don't think that how that even be possible. All right, we're going to talk about this Junto Nakatani card before we get into the chaos that was the Eubank and Benn press conference, because that'll be really the beef of today's episode. So if we talk about the card that went down the other day, there was 5 fights on it. It started at 3 a.m. on the East Coast, so I did not wake up to watch it. I just watched it sporadically throughout the day. You had a 4-rounder and a 6-rounder to start it off, and normally I wouldn't really talk about this, but the 6-rounder that happened between Eguro Akai and Ryuya Moriai was one of the worst stoppages I've seen recently. I say recently because there was one on Pro Box TV last week, which was probably the worst stoppage I've seen. I thought this one was pretty bad. There could be a train of thought that would support this, and I get it, but essentially, Akai, after winning the first round, gets dropped in the second round. Certainly he does. Gets back up, and Moriai puts it on him, but Akai is in the pocket. And while they're in the pocket, Moriai throws a shot that temporarily stuns Akai, and he kind of has to regather himself. But it didn't even look like he was that hurt. His legs went out for a second, and then he recuperated very quickly. And the ref stepped in. It was very awkward. It was just like, what? And after the fact, it looked like, okay, Akai looks a little bit shaken up. But that isn't. I don't know if that means that he was shaken up because of the shot or just because what just happened. Did I just lose? So I don't know. I just thought that was a pretty odd stoppage. I didn't love it. Wasn't a huge fan of it. It was shaping up to be a pretty exciting fight. They were Japanese middleweights, which is rare. So hopefully we can see that run back again, honestly. But I also don't really care because both those guys were what you would hear called journeymen. So it's whatever. Now, we had two world championships on this card, the first of which was really had we the most to talk about, I feel, with Seiya Tsutsumi and Daigo Higa. So this was a rematch from, I think, 5 years ago, or maybe it was more than that, where they had a draw in the first fight. And this fight also resulted in a draw, but I did not like this. So I actually scored this bout 117-111, which may be a little bit wide, but those first rounds where not a lot happened, I gave to Tsutsumi. I could see it 116-112. I could maybe even see it 115-113, but even that, I'm like, eh. But a draw is very, very disappointing. I was terribly disappointed with Daigo Higa. He gave it Yoshiki Takai everything that he could handle when they fought in September. And tonight, or Monday night, Monday morning, I should say, it was like he wasn't doing any of that. It's against Tsutsumi. He barely threw more than one single jab at a time. And it was so frustrating to watch. You know, Tsutsumi, they had an unfortunate headbutt in the fourth round. Tsutsumi gets a pretty decent cut over his left eye, or maybe it was right, but I believe it was the left eye. And, you know, his vision is impaired. And instead of Higa taking advantage of that, it seems like it only made Tsutsumi stronger. And he just kept on, he just stepped up his game. And, you know, Tsutsumi's an all-action fighter. He's one of my favorite of the Japanese world champions. He's always entertaining to watch. And he did not let that cut slow him down. As you saw with Tim Tszyu, granted, his cut was definitely worse. When he fought Sebastian Fundora, he kind of lost his speed after that and lost the fight. That was not the case with Tsutsumi. I thought he actually stepped up his game. And Higa, we know, is a very strong puncher. I think he had 19 knockouts and 21 wins. And it was very clear he was waiting to set up a big shot. But you can't do that in a world championship. You are losing rounds. Round 9 was the time where he finally landed that big shot, and we got a round of the year. Put Tsutsumi on his ass. Tsutsumi gets back up, immediately brings the power to him, because that's what Tsutsumi is. He's all action, and he's like, oh, I can't lose this round. Gets up and then puts Higa flat on his face. I mean, unbelievable. And at first, when Higa got knocked down, I was like, oh my God, he's done. Gets back up. He's still a little bit more stunned. And then Tsutsumi ends up winning the round he got put down in. I mean, incredible, incredible round. Round of the year for now. Could end up being the same way. I think that round of the year is always going to be something where both fighters have a tremendous amount of success. You know, for example, last year we had Abdullah Mason and Johan Vasquez, where Vasquez landed two knockdowns as opposed to Mason's one. You know, three knockdowns in one round coming from different ways is tremendous stuff. And, you know, this was no different. This was a really good fight, I thought. Just disappointing overall from these scorecards. Not one judge had it for Tsutsumi. Not even one had it for Higa. They all had it a draw, which to me is a little bit fishy. When I don't think that a lot of other people had that a draw. As for what's next, I don't want a trilogy. I don't think there's any need to. I haven't seen the first fight, but I've seen this one, and Tsutsumi looked way better in there than Higa and got robbed of a win. He gets to hold on to the belt, so there's no need for a trilogy. You know, it has been a draw twice. He hasn't actually beaten Higa yet, but who cares? I don't really need to see one. What I would like to see for Tsutsumi next would be a unification. However, it doesn't look like that's going to happen because of the other two guys that fought tonight. It seems that they're going to get the other two champions. And that's a little bit disappointing for Tsutsumi. And now I worry that they're actually going to put him in there with Higa, which I won't be super upset about. I just feel that Higa doesn't get he doesn't deserve the opportunity to go right back in with Tsutsumi, especially when he's coming off of a world title loss. He goes straight back into another one. Granted, that performance against Take was very good, and it could have gone either way. You know, I wasn't sure that it made a lot of sense for them to go to a trilogy. So speaking of who else fought on this card, Tenshin Nasukawa, this guy is a superstar. He is 54-0 across kickboxing, boxing, and MMA, which is unbelievable. Seriously, I don't think that he's had that many MMA fights at all. I think just a couple. This was his sixth professional boxing match. He took on and outboxed Jason Maloney, who held the world title this time last year. I mean, unbelievable. Sixth fight. And it wasn't just that, like, oh, you know, he's a stronger, younger fighter, which he probably could have been. Probably was. He outboxed him. He was moving around the ring. I mean, yeah, Maloney had his rounds where he looked really good and really strong, and he almost dropped Tension in the sixth round, which was very odd because Nasukawa, he went down, but then he jumped right back up and didn't seem like he actually got any gloves touched or his butt touched or the ropes helped him up, but he essentially did get knocked down and just quickly jumped back up. But I didn't think that Maloney's performance was bad. I thought that it was okay. It was just that Tension just looked unbelievable and was so accurate, so precise off the back foot. I mean, the kid is going to be an absolute superstar. I can't believe it. And he was, you know, very, very impressive kickboxing resume, and is now going to go and probably fight for world title maybe next. I know that they wanted to do the Yoshiki Take fight. He has a high ranking with the WBO. He held a some form of regional belt with them. I believe he still does. This wasn't on the line with this fight because Maloney was Australian. But, you know, I think that they bring Take into the ring. I think that that's the plan, is to next do Yoshiki Take versus Tenshin Nasukawa, which I have no objections to. I think that's a fantastic fight, 118 pounds. Then we get to the main event. Junto Nakatani has to be on the pound-for-pound list, I think. Granted, this was against David Cuellar, who was an undefeated opponent. I believe that this was probably Junto's toughest opponent since he fought Alfredo Santiago, but even then, that was pretty easy. But going into that fight, Santiago was the champion. Nakatani entered a new weight class. Then he fought Vincent Astrolabio. He fought Petsor Chitpatana. So it was just kind of like, okay, opponents. And then we get to David Cuellar, who is undefeated. He's the same size as Nakatani. Nakatani's a very tall bantamweight. Everyone he's faced is much shorter than him, not this guy. So there's reasons there. It's like, okay, this could be a tougher fight. No, it was not. Nakatani did brilliant, I thought. You know, first two rounds, very measured, you know, took his time, was piecing his stuff together, and then third round just executes, lands a brilliant shot to the body, which stuns him, and then just capitalizes, boom, 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 puts him down. As soon as, you know, as that's done, it's like, okay, this is going to be the end of the fight, because Cuellar gets up, he doesn't look good, and Nakatani just runs right back in with essentially the same combination with, it's like Cuellar didn't even put his hands up, was just waiting, he was just like, all right, here we go. And just gets put down exact same spot, didn't move at all. Meaning he didn't move at all once they started fighting again. He was not unconscious from the punch or anything. He was okay, but you know, very, very good performance. The thing with Nakatani is we need to see him in a tougher fight. He can't keep on doing mandatories against guys. He needs to be in a unification or needs to go up and fight Naoya in a way. Luckily, that prayer was answered when they bring in Ryosuke Nishida into the ring. To essentially, I think that it may already be agreed, because I'm hearing a lot of stuff about June saying that they both want the fight next, and I'm really happy to see that Japan is finally starting to unify, because they've got all these champions in all these lower divisions where, I mean, you look at flyweight and bantamweight specifically, they have most, if not all, of the world champions in that division. And looking at bantamweight, you have four Japanese world champions and they all hold a different belt. There's no unified champion. That needs to change. We're getting Kenshiro Taraji versus Seijo Yuri Akui in March. That'll unify WBC and WBA flyweight titles. So they're doing that. And then over here, we're going to get Junto Nakatani and Ryosuke Nishida looking to unify WBC and IBF titles in what would be June. And the Ring Magazine belt would also be on the line there, I believe, as they're number one and two, you know, which makes it the best fight in the division. So absolutely, that's the next fight to make. You make Nakatani and Nishida. You make Take versus Tenshin. And then what'll probably end up being Tsutsumi Higa 3 or Tsutsumi versus somebody else. Winner of whoever Tsutsumi fights next, he needs to be unification after that. And I don't know if we're going to get Nakatani staying in the division to go undisputed. Honestly, if he beats Nishida and moves up, I'll have no objections. He unifies part of the weight class. He doesn't need to fight all three other champions or however many are left to unify after that. I just want to see him fight in a way. So fight Nishida in June. And I think that it's either going to be him and Inoue, they're going to fight at the end of this year, like December, or they'll fight first thing 2026. So we'll see. The only worry I have with Inoue versus Nakatani is we're hearing it'll be Picasso for Inoue in June, MJ in September, and Nick Ball or some featherweight in December, meaning that Inoue wants to move up to featherweight then, which really worries me because I'm like, ugh, you're going to fight all these guys, and then right when it makes sense for you to fight Nakatani as your last fight at 122, because he'd be coming up, you're going to go up to 126. Because once Inoue goes up to 126, he's not coming back down to 122 for Nakatani. And Nakatani, I'm sure, could fight at 126, but he's not going to want to. He's going to want to fight at 122, stay there, get a belt, then eventually move up to 126. So we'll see what happens, but very good card. You know, I love these Japan cards. The next big one is, like I said, Taraji Akui. I just hope that there's a U.S. broadcaster, because as of right now, I'm not sure if there will be. Usually Top Rank and ESPN do it, but there's no Top Rank fighters on that card, and it seems like they have no involvement. So we'll see what happens, but very good performance from Nakatani. I think he's number 10 on my pound-for-pound list. Let's talk about this big press conference that occurred today in Manchester. So born rivals. Chris Eubank Jr. and Connor Benn will face off April 26th at middleweight at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. First Ring magazine card. Today we had the first press conference. There's planned to be another one on Thursday at the stadium. Not sure if that's actually going to happen anymore. We'll see, but this one was open to the public, so you had some good cheers in there and such. And it was very interesting because Eubank enters in style, comes in, and automatically he's like, okay, I'm going to sit. Me and Shalom are going to switch seats. I'm going to sit closer to the action. I'm going to sit closer to my enemy. So already making a statement, being like, I run the show, whatever. And then Eddie Hearn is asked to speak. I'm not sure if he was asked to speak first, but he was asked to speak pretty early on. And immediately, Chris just says, no, shut up. You're not going to talk. This is my show. I'm going to decide who talks. It's just going to be me and Connor Benn. Saying that's all who he wants to hear talk. And Eddie's like, no, because you're not going to shut up Eddie Hearn. You know, I love Eddie Hearn, but there's one thing about him is that his mouth is always running. And Chris Eubank, he has these things. He has these premeditated ideas of, oh, here's how I'm gonna steal the show. Here's how I'm going to get in everybody's head. And if I'm being honest, before the last 10 seconds of this press conference, I thought that none of it was working. I thought that his approach with trying to be so slow and talk the whole time and, sound like this intellectual. And so I thought it was so boring. I thought that he was just talking pure rubbish, as Connor kept saying. I thought that Connor was honestly doing a better job of getting in his head. And, you know, Eubank didn't sound like this guy where I'm like, oh, wow, I'm really interested to hear him speak. I was like, man, shut up. You sound like such an idiot. And Connor was just calling him that. And I thought Connor was funny. I didn't think that Chris was very funny. I thought Chris was dry. I could tell that Chris thought that he was getting in his head, and he just wasn't. And I think that was frustrating Chris. And he was trying to come up with stuff talking about – I mean, Chris should not have even brought up the rehydration clause. And this just shows that him – and I thought that, again, for the beginning of this press conference, I thought that him and Boxer's side of it were losing. You know, you had Eubank bringing up the rehydration clause, saying they're trying to restrict and restrain my weight and stuff and limit what I can eat and drink. And, I mean, rehydration clause is becoming a common thing in the sport, and it makes sense because these guys drop way down in weight and then come up 30 pounds overnight and kind of weight bully. And that was kind of what, you know, Eubank, that's his advantage in this fight, undoubtedly. He's two divisions above what Connor Benn fights at, and is, you know, bringing him up to his weight class. I think it's only fair that there's a rehydration clause. Eubank is a much bigger guy than Connor Benn. I think it's only fair that you limit how much Eubank can resize, because Connor Benn's going to come to 160, drop down to 154, 155, probably. Eubank is going to go up to 180. I mean, you got a 20, 30-pound difference there. That's unbelievable. So I think that they need to I don't mind the 10-pound rehydration clause. You're getting what you want. You know, you're getting it at your division. You're not having to cut any weight than you usually have to. So be happy with what you have and, you know, move on. And so I thought it was stupid of him to bring that up at the press conference, because it's pretty easy to take down and to, you know, say, okay, yeah, we want a rehydration clause, but it's because it's at your division. We're coming up in weight. We have to make it safe for Connor. You know, all this stuff. Super easily take down his argument. You know, make him look like a baby. Like, show me the money is what he was saying at one point. And I'm like, dude, this guy, he's just like frustrating to watch. And he's talking about trying to make this point of, Connor, you're the villain with me now. See, if I've already been the villain, but now you're a villain with me. And just trying to get him to like admit that he was a villain. And Connor's just saying like, dude, I don't care. And like, I agree with him. Like, who cares? Like, they don't like you, but they don't like me, but they also don't like you. Who cares? Just fight, you know? I mean, it was brilliant in getting me excited for the fight. And I mean, I'm sure you can kind of hear who I like less, but, you know, I just thought that it was really annoying. And then Shalom comes in and tries to make this point because, you know, you see what Eddie Hearn does when the going gets tough and there starts to be back and forth with his fighters, especially when Eddie Hearn's name is invoked, he gets in there too. And he also tries to add fuel to the fire and he defends his name. And Ben Shalom is not as vocal. He's not as good a talker as Eddie Hearn. It's just quite frank. He's not. He knows that. But he felt that I'm not talking enough. Eddie was talking way more than me. I need to be talking as much. So he decides I'm going to hop in here and I'm going to bring in an idea of my own. And I thought that the actual, at first when he did, when he challenged Nigel Benn and said, who has Connor fought? I thought that that was okay. I was like, okay, yeah, fair. Who has he fought? Chris has probably fought tougher opposition. Has Chris looked good against tougher opposition? No. Has he won? Not really. And he's also a good bit older. However, he's had those fights. And he's fought at British level where Connor Benn hasn't fought yet. So I was not mad that they were – I thought that was an okay comeback. But then he brings up the rematch clause, which just gets instantly thrown down, saying like, oh, you guys are so confident you're going to win. Then why do you want to do the rematch clause? And then Eddie just goes, mate, the rematch clause was your idea. And they just completely disparage his argument, and he looks like a clown up there. And I just thought that they were just losing the press conference and just not winning the mind games at all, where, you know, Chris appears as a smarter fighter, and we know that Ben is a very angry fighter. He's a very angry man. So we knew that he was going to go up there, and he was going to try and get into his head, and I didn't think it was really working. I thought that if anything, Eubank was going to get frustrated because he wasn't getting in Ben's head. And Ben was mad, but not in the way that, you know, Eubank's in his head. He's just mad. He doesn't like the guy. So I think that, you know, Ben is totally winning the press conference. And, you know, I was just like, whatever. It was pretty funny. It was exciting to watch because usually these boxing press conferences are so boring, where you have all the undercard fighters and they all go through, yeah, I'm just excited to compete and have a good performance. And, yeah, you'll see not a lot of smack talk usually. And if you do, it's not this good. This was just Eubank, just Ben. Anybody else hardly got a word out. Eddie Hearn talked a good bit as well, and Nigel Benn and Ben Shalom as well had their stuff to say. But, I mean, Ade Oladipo, who's presenting, hardly got a word out, which is good. You know, you want the guys to just go ahead and talk and get interested. And the one thing that Addy did said was when he accidentally called Ronnie Davis Ronnie Shields, which Eubank, you know, exploded at him for, saying like, oh, get it right. You know, he's done enough to not F up his name. And he did the exact same thing to Addy in October when Addy said that he was knocked out by Liam Smith. And I believe Eubank said, like, oh, get your facts straight. The ref stopped the fight. My corner stopped the fight. It wasn't a knockout. You know, like, whatever. The Ronnie Shields one, yeah, he should have corrected him. But it probably, you know, whatever. Then we do the face-off. And I'm expecting, okay, I'm not really expecting something. I don't know why. I'm just expecting, yeah, it's a good face-off. I want to see what they look like. And then Eubank slaps him. And at first, we couldn't tell it was an egg at first. At first, I thought it looked like a punch. And I tweeted that. I was like, oh my God, he just punched Connor Benn in the face. And after I watched it again, I was like, okay, he didn't punch him. But he looked like he straight up socked him in the face. I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, is Benn bleeding? You know, this is huge. Like, the fight could get called off now, or Eubank can pay some big fee now or something like that. You know, I was like, why would he do this? And then we find out, okay, it was more of a slap with a push. And we see it was an egg. You know, and he talked about how much eggs did you have to eat, you know, to pass that test. And I did think that Eubank did a pretty good job of catching Connor up on the drug cheats, with him just saying, I'm cleared now. That's all that matters. You know, he did do a good job there and got what he needed to do there. And then Eubank walks out of the venue, having infuriated Connor and Nigel Benn. Nigel Benn went at his throat. Don't think he had much success. And there's a clip of Eubank leaving the arena or venue or whatever it is, just playing with an egg, just tossing it up and down. I'm like, wow. That whole time I thought that he was like, oh yeah, no, he's not doing it. And then he wins in the end and totally gets in Connor's head. We don't know if we're going to have a press conference on Thursday, because you can't allow these guys to get in there. You can't allow them to touch each other, because Connor Benn is such a mad fighter. If I thought either of them were going to hit each other, it would be Benn, just because he's so angry. He didn't. Chris hit him and got out of there. And I mean, I haven't seen a fighter hit someone like that at a face-off in like big time boxing in such a long time. I can't remember the last time it really kicked off like that. I mean, I'm sure there's other ones that have happened, but the big one I remember was Canelo and Caleb Plant, where I think it was Caleb Plant swung at Canelo, and Canelo jumped back and then smacked him in the face and cut him. You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens next. I don't know if we're going to get a press conference on Thursday. If so, they can't come at each other. But because, I mean, as soon as Connor Benn gets anywhere near him, he's going to attack him. You got to keep them away until April 26th. I mean, I don't even know if, like, when you do the face-offs the rest of the time, you're going to have to do what KSI and Tommy Fury did and have a cage in the middle, like, genuinely, because they're going to attack each other. There's real hate here, and it makes me – I mean, hey, this sold the fight. This makes me so much more excited for April 26th. I can't wait. You know, we're going to see what this press conference looks like on Thursday. In the scuffle, it looked like Eddie Hearn even shoved Ben Shalom. He looked really mad. Which I just thought it was funny because you know that Eddie was looking forward to shoving Ben, and they're working together now, but they still just don't like each other, you can tell. And he didn't shove him like, you know, like, let's get it on, but just kind of shoved him in the mat of the thing with shoving the rest of Eubank's team. And I don't know, it was very, very interesting to just watch the whole thing unfold. This is one of the best press conferences I've watched in a while. You know, just really did a good job of selling the fight. There was real hate, real animosity there. I cannot wait for this April 26th day. It's going to be a big card in a stadium fight. And, yeah, real, real hate here. We're going to see if we even get a press conference on Thursday. This is, like, a developing story because it's going to be hard. You're going to have to, like, literally restructure whatever stage they're planning on doing because you can't have them close to each other because Conor Ben will run at him and attack him. Part of me thinks that Chris Eubank – did this on purpose because I don't know if we were planning on having media questions because that's usually the point of having press conferences in different locations is to have different people asking different questions or at least different people on stage. But when it's the same people on stage in both locations, what are they going to talk about? They talked about everything they needed to talk about today. What are you going to talk about on Thursday? Now we have something to talk about. Now we get to talk about the egg. And even if they don't talk about the egg, even if this doesn't happen, I can see this as another backup plan by Eubank. He came up there. He brought up everything he needed to say. And then throws this egg, expecting, okay, no other press conference now. I'm going to go back home and train. And I win. We're going to see what happens. If there is another press conference, they're planning on doing a face-off on the pitch. I mean, you can't even have them close to each other anymore. So huge, huge stuff. It was crazy. I can't wait to see the rest of the build-up for this fight because, boy, is it going to be awesome. Like, it already started off great. So I just updating something. I just checked and saw that Eubank – apparently sat through the entire press conference with eggs in his suit pocket, in his jacket pocket. So that makes it all the more funnier. He was sitting there the whole time with them. It was totally premeditated. He had like six in his pocket. Crazy. Okay, let's talk about this KSI Dylan Danis undercard. So this got announced literally right as I finished my recording for my last episode that came out on Sunday. So let me just say that I like Misfits. I know that a lot of people don't, so I'll do this quickly. But this looks like a pretty good card for them. You've got KSI, Dylan Danis, of course, Darren Till, Darren Stewart, which we've already talked about. Walid Sharks versus Fox the G is a very, very good Misfits matchup. It'll be a really good fight. Both these guys are actually pretty good boxers. Fox the G has got skinny power. He's very strong for such a young kid. And, you know, he doesn't look like it, but he is. Walid Sharks is a former Golden Gloves champion, I believe. He's a very, very good fighter. That's a really, really big fight. Walid Sharks hasn't fought on Misfits in like a year and a half since losing to Dean the Great for the second time. He's been very injury prone, and Fox the G, this will be a big step up for him. So I'm really excited to see that fight. You got Chase D'Amore versus Roman Fury, who Chase D'Amore, I guarantee you've heard of him because he's very funny and his whole I'm the GOAT, I'm the greatest ever. It's very funny, but also he sucks. He's gotten a lot better, but man, when he first started, every single fight, there was something new that was controversial and something funny about it, where his first fight on Misfits, he, you know, just looked like a girl and gassed out super quick and was just throwing air bunches at ghosts, and then his next fight, he, you know, knocked the guy down and then started, you know, beating him on his way down and hitting him on the ground, like ground and pounding in a boxing match, which you're not allowed to do. Then he took on Alan Belcher on, like, 2 days' notice and got, you know, just obliterated, and then his like mouth guard kept on coming out or something with his gloves, and his coach kept on like intervening and yelling at the ref, so he just got disqualified. So weird. And then he finally fights Tempo Arch for the title on the prime card and loses a controversial decision where he had never won a fight, and it's like, man, that sucks. And then he comes on and he wins his next two fights, and you know, he's been like undefeated since then. He's even gone and gotten some pro fights against trash cans, but now he's in with Roman Fury. You know, who's Tyson Fury's younger brother. He's not that great, but again, this is like a Tommy Fury level guy where is he ever going to be something, like even a British champion? No, probably not, but they should be beating these YouTubers, especially Chase D'Amore, who's, you know, Tommy Fury beat Jake Paul and KSI. Chase D'Amore is not as skilled as them at all. So this is going to be really interesting, but this is a fight that these guys have been wanting to fight for a long time. Misfits has got some like good like pro fighters on this card. You've got Joe Laws versus Harley Benn, which again, is this like a high level pro fight? No, but these are solid named British pro fighters who are exciting to watch. Joe Laws is perfect for Misfits, just his fighting style. He's so entertaining, he's so wild. They're fighting for the MF Pro super middleweight title. So it looks like the pro division is something that Misfits is looking to build out. They just signed a heavyweight Olympian, you know, so they're going crazy there. They got Amir Anderson returning, who's a very good prospect they've got. That kid could genuinely be a world champion, and he fights on Misfits. It's nuts. Argentinian King, Small Spartan J. Again, these names are ridiculous, but that'll be a decent fight. Small Spartan J is like 5'2". It'll be a really good fight. And then you've got the last fight is the Misfits debut of Demi Sims, who I'm not sure who that is. I don't think she's a fighter or anything, but you know what, for a Misfits card, this is good. It's different. It's not the usual names you see all over. Is it a huge card? No, but I think there's a lot of interesting fights on here, and I'm excited to see it go down. Hopefully the pay-per-view price isn't too high, but I'm excited. This is better than I was expecting, because some of their cards have not been as good recently. All right, let's talk about some other stuff. Zoltan Zaurbek returns against Fuzile. That'll be at the co-main on the Janibek card, so that's pretty good. He's a really good fighter who hasn't really gotten the push he needs. I think he's about to be mandatory for a world title shot at 130 pounds with, I think, the WBA. He's very highly ranked with them. He's a really good fighter. He signed with Wasserman, you know, so you don't usually see him on a lot of big cards, but he was just co-main events on a Pro Boxing Conlon card. He co-mains on this world championship card. You got Arsene Goulamirian, I believe, is supposed to be on this card as well. So it looks like it's going to be a pretty good undercard there with some interesting Eastern European names. Josh Emmett, Lerone Murphy will headline UFC Vegas 105 on April 5th. That's a really good fight at welterweight. I'm excited to see that one happen. Lerone Murphy is undefeated and has managed to stay undefeated as of recent. I know they had a tough fight recently, I believe. This is going to be another one. And Josh Emmett is no slouch, so we're going to see what happens here. I think that's a really good matchup. Good main event for them to kick off April. Murajan Akhmadaliev's promoter, I think it's Vadim Nemkov, the same guy who promotes Dmitry Bivol with World of Boxing. He says that the fight with Inoue is looking more positive. They've been having some positive conversations with his team. Now, this doesn't at all shock me. We know that Inoue is not necessarily ducking him. He's just taking easier fights before he gets to MJ. And, you know, he's fighting David Picasso in June and then somebody in September, and the plan has been to fight Murajan Akhmadaliev. So I'm guessing these positive conversations are for to fight Akhmadaliev. Akhmadaliev doesn't fight that much. He fights usually 1 to 2 times a year. He only fought in December of 2023 and then didn't return until December 2024. And I was hoping he'd get a fight around April, May time before the September fight. But maybe they're discussing this with Inoue as MJ's next fight, because we all know Inoue's going to beat Picasso. And we also all know Inoue's going to beat Akhmadaliev, but at least it's a challenge. So, I think that they're just, now that the Picasso deal is done, I think that they're just kind of moving ahead and starting to negotiate with MJ's team and say, hey, we want to do this fight in September. So that looks good. Tim Zhu versus Joey Spencer is official for April 6th. I'm excited for this. This is a brilliant, brilliant comeback fight for Tim Zhu. He's with Joey Spencer, who is only has one defeat. I think he's like 20-1 or something like that. Decent fighter, but nobody that Tim Zhu shouldn't be able to beat. He's not somebody that's like at the end of their career or a total journeyman or something. This would be a fight that Tim Zhu will have to show up for, but one that he should definitely win. And the plan is, you know, for them to do this fight, and then Keith Thurman fights in Australia against Brock Jarvis for him and Thurman to fight in the summer, you know, in Australia once again. So I like that plan. I like that the plan they're taking with Tim Zhu is, hey, you know, we know that we need to recuperate. We had a really bad loss against Murtaz Aliyev. We're going to take it a step back. We're going to go in and have some fights in Australia against guys that we should be able to beat, but some big fights. Joey Spencer is a decent name. Keith Thurman is a big fight, name-wise. And it'll be an even fight then. When before Tim Zhu was on top of the world, Keith Thurman hadn't fought in like 3 years. And now Keith Thurman gets his comeback fight, gets to build a name in Australia. Tim Zhu is not the fighter he was a year ago when he was on top of the world. I like this. Also, the good thing is that this is on a Sunday, not a Wednesday. Australia does their big fights on Wednesday for some reason. This is on a Sunday, which gives me hope that they're going to broadcast it in the U.S. on Prime Video Saturday night into this fight Sunday morning or Sunday midday. I'm not sure how it worked, but that's what they do for UFC, and that's what they've done for past Tim Zoo cards in 2023. I know he would headline cards on Sundays in Australia, and it'd be broadcast on Showtime at night. So hopefully they can do that. I hope that the Keith Thurman fight is the same deal, but I don't think that's going to be the case. I just hope it's not Prime Video at all, but I don't think it will be. This one looks like it may be. Ilia Topuria is weighing 187 pounds right now. I genuinely, like, I know that these guys go up in weight, but I can't believe that. I mean, same with, like, Terrence Crawford weighing in 186. I mean, how do they get this big outside of fight camp when, I mean, they're, like, 155, 145 for Ilia Topuria. Now he's going to fight at 155. And when you show me 187 on the scale, I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get why you're going down to 155 or going up to 155. I mean, that is nuts. That really is nuts. I have no idea how much that means he weighs on fight night. It's crazy. Speaking of UFC, speaking of 155, terrible news. Dan Hooker is out of the Justin Gaethje fight with an injury to his hand. This sucks because that was such a good fight. That was probably the best fight on that card outside of the main event. Probably the in terms of watching it, guaranteed fight of the night. I mean, five rounds of just pure war. I was so excited for that fight. It's no longer happening. They're looking for a replacement. So Justin Gaethje will probably still be fighting on the day. Mateusz Gamrot is a possibility, which I'm not going to lie, I don't hate, because that fight with Hooker, it was a fantastic fight. And I think that because Hooker won such a really entertaining fight, people assume, well, wow, Hooker's super good, which he is. But that fight with Gamrot could have gone either way. All right, first time watching it, I kind of thought, did Gamrot win that? So, you know, I think that people overlook overhype that win from Hooker just because it was a fantastic fight that Hooker got the nod in. Not saying that he didn't deserve it, but it was a very close fight that Gamrot looked good in as well. Gamrot is a possibility. I think that Fiziev threw his name out. Some other fighters threw their name out, but not all that I can remember. I'm guessing it'll be Gamrot. That makes the most sense. My only worry is that will this still be five rounds? I don't think that it will be. If a fighter's coming in on, what is it? I think 12 days notice. Is that right? 11 days notice. Yeah, I think it's 11 days notice. They're not really going to be in the good conditioning to go 25 minutes in the octagon. Maybe they will be, but usually not. So we'll see. Queensberry's Collision on the Coast card, headlined by Garner and Jimenez for the EBU title this weekend on DAZN. Rest of the world outside of UK and Ireland, where it'll be on TNT Sports. This is good. Queensberry's only had a couple of fights on TNT Sports this year. They had the Chisora Volin card. They've got the Baldohini card March 15th. And those ones, we knew that when they did the Magnificent 7 card in December, and that was broadcast on DAZN, rest of the world, we knew, okay, they're going to do this for the for their cards that are not in the U.S. or that are not are prior to the DAZN deal starting, you know, because Queensberry doesn't really have a U.S. partner. So I'm like, okay, cool. I love that. But are we going to get all of them or just the bigger ones? And Garner Jimenez is not one of the bigger ones. Luckily, we are going to get this one as well. Excited for it. It's actually a really good card. Joe Joyce is still fighting on it. So hopefully he looks good because he's got a big fight with Dillian White a month later. Yeah, it's really odd he's fighting. Josh Padley is saying that he can now retire from his electrician job, which is awesome. I'm very happy for him. You know, he looked okay against Shakur Stevenson. He brought the heat. He stepped in on 4 days' notice, saved the card, saved the fight. He's now had a big win against Mark Chamberlain on Riyadh season and then came in and saved a fight for them. So I think that His Excellency told him, hey, I'm going to bring you back again. You know, you've done well for us and you deserve another fight. So he's going to get to come back again, and he's been paid enough now where he can retire, and you know, he's got a house now, and he's going to go full-time boxing, which he should, because is he going to be a world champion? No, but he got his world title shot. That gave him a lot of credit, gave him a lot of name value, and now he can go, and he can probably fight at English level, maybe even British, but yeah, we'll see. BKFC announced their return to Omaha for April 18th. I believe that's a Friday, so you know, I like my Friday night BKFC. Should be a good event. Yan Santana signs with Top Rank, and he'll return March 29th in Las Vegas on the Michaela Mayer-Sandy Ryan rematch. Very good fighter. He's 13-0 with 12 knockouts. I believe, if I'm correct, he actually used to fight with Top Rank and then was dropped by them, because I feel like he fought on the Teofimo Lopez-Steve Claggett card. He fought with them in – Okay, yeah, maybe I'm wrong. But anyways, he fought on the Steve Claggett card in June. I thought the commentators were saying something about him with that, but like, maybe another fighter. I think, I don't know, that was Elvis Rodriguez. You know, I'm wrong. But anyways, very good fighter. He's a knockout machine. He's 13-0 with 12 knockouts. He knocked out Eduardo Baez in November on the Conceição Foster 2 card. He's a featherweight. You know, so he's beating some – that's a good name for him to beat there. I'm excited to see him fight. He'll be in a 10-rounder on March 29th. They're putting together a very good card there. He's a very exciting fighter to watch. So very excited to see that go down. And the last thing we'll talk about, Jose Aldo has just announced that he'll return against Ayman Zahabi at UFC 315. Aldo is number 10 ranked bantamweight, and Zahabi is number 14 ranked bantamweight. So a decent matchup there. Zahabi is Canadian, so this makes sense. I'm worried that they're putting Aldo in again with another young fighter for him to lose against. And I know that when they fought on in May, that didn't happen. But then he fought in October, and I thought that he got robbed. I can't even remember the guy's name, but I know that he got robbed against him. So hopefully that's not the case here. I can't believe Jose Aldo is still fighting. He's just been around for so long. I don't even know how old he is anymore, but he's got to be getting old. But yeah, we get to see him fight again May 10th, UFC 315. That's all I've got for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. It was a really fun episode today. Hopefully we'll have some good stuff to talk about on Thursday. We'll have another Eubank Ben presser. We'll talk about this big fight weekend we've got ahead. Friday, there will be the Matchroom card, two Matchroom fight cards this weekend. There'll be the one in Canada with Rocky Hernandez and Rene Tellez Giron. You've got BKFC, and I believe it's Albuquerque on Friday night. Saturday, you've got Crocker Donovan in Belfast. Brilliant, brilliant all-Irish fight there. There's also an IBF eliminator for the welterweight title held by Jerome Boots Ennis. Really good card. Then you've got the very good card I mentioned in Bournemouth with Queensberry with Garner versus Jimenez. And then Saturday night, you'll have a card at the Apex with Kape and Ambakayev. I need to check how to pronounce his name. I totally butchered that. And then you got Subriel Matias returning in another IBF eliminator, this time at 140 pounds against Valenzuela in Puerto Rico. And then big one, Gervonta Tank Davis against Lamont Roach with a pretty good undercard, two 140 title fights. Yoannis Tejas on that as well. Very excited. Should be a really fun fight weekend yet again. That's all. See you on Thursday. Thank you so much for listening. Peace out.